Amazing Tuesday.
This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says four people were killed in the aftermath of fresh Russian strikes, the latest attack to cause massive power disruptions across the country and pile pressure on its embattled critical infrastructure as temperatures plunge. Quote, power engineers immediately started restoration work, Zelensky said in his nightly address, adding, quote, it was necessary to switch to emergency shutdowns in many Ukrainian regions. Russian President Vladimir Putin on Monday drove a Mercedes across the Crimean Bridge linking southern Russia to the annexed Crimean Peninsula, less than 2 months since an explosion tore through one of the Kremlin chief's showcase infrastructure projects. The 12-mile road and rail bridge, which was personally opened by Putin in 2018, was bombed on October 8th in an attack Russia said was carried out by Ukraine. Ukraine never claimed responsibility for the explosion that happened a day after Putin's 70th birthday. Confusion over the status of Iran's religious police is growing as state media cast doubt on reports the force had been shut down. The mixed messages have raised speculation that Iran's clerical leadership is considering concessions in an attempt to diffuse widespread anti-government protests that are entering the third month. Despite the uncertainty, it has appeared for weeks that enforcement of the strict dress code for women has been scaled back. Find more on our website, voanews.com, or follow us on the VOA mobile app. This is VOA News. South Africa's governing African National Congress National Executive Committee has said the party will vote against adoption of a report that found preliminary evidence President Cyril Ramaphosa may have violated the Constitution. Reuters correspondent David Doyle has more.
Outside a meeting venue in Johannesburg, a crowd sang its support for Cyril Ramaphosa. The executive committee of his ruling African National Congress met on Monday to discuss allegations he may have committed misconduct and violated his oath of office. That follows a report by a panel of experts into allegations that large sums of foreign currency were hidden at Ramaphosa's game farm, and that he failed to report the money missing when it was stolen in 2020. On Monday, Ramaphosa filed court papers challenging the report, while at the executive committee meeting, ANC Treasurer General Paul Mashatile announced the ANC would vote in Parliament against adoption of the panel report.
Democratic Republic of Congo's government on Monday said 272 civilians were killed in a massacre in an eastern town last week, raising the death toll from a previous estimate of 50. Congo's government has blamed the massacre on the M23 rebel group, which has denied responsibility. The United Nations said last week it had received reports of a high number of civilian casualties that occurred during clashes between the M23 and local militias on November 29th, but did not give any figures. Congo's army and the M23, a Tutsi-led militia, have been locked in a fighting for months in the country's rest of east. Sudan's political parties and military signed a framework deal on Monday they said would pave the way for a two-year civilian-led transition towards elections and end a sometimes violent standoff triggered by a coup in October 2021. But the deal has been opposed by protest groups that are against negotiations with the military and by Islamic factions loyal to the regime of former leader Omar al-Bashir, who was ousted in 2019. Under the framework agreement, the military, which has led the government since the coup, agreed it would only be represented on a Security and Defense Council headed by a prime minister. Brazil's indigenous leaders were disappointed on Monday after President-elect Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva appeared to backtrack on a promise to create a Ministry of Indigenous Affairs to help restore rights and protections that were undermined by the current government. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Today is Tuesday, December 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Dufo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the West condemns what Ukrainian authorities call the latest massive missile attack across their country by Russia.
Fires rage in Kherson after a night of heavy shelling. Attacks on this southern Ukrainian city formerly occupied by Russian forces.
An increase in threats and violence against Colombian journalists creates fear in the media community.
So far in 2022, 177 journalists in Colombia have been threatened, according to the Foundation for Press Freedom, a non-profit media rights group.
And Brazil and Croatia qualify for the quarterfinals of Qatar's World Cup. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Russia has unleashed what Ukrainian authorities called the latest, quote, massive missile attack, unquote, across their country, striking homes and buildings, killing civilians and disrupting electrical power and water supplies in areas, notably in the Black Sea port of Odessa. Ukraine's Air Force claimed it shut down more than 60 of the 70 missiles fired. Hours earlier, two explosions rocked air bases deep inside Russia, and Defense Ministry in Moscow said it has shut down two Ukrainian drones attacking the sites, and that three Russian servicemen were killed by falling debris, and four others were wounded. The attacks at the Russian bases raised the threat of a dangerous escalation in the war. Western powers have labeled Russia's ongoing war in neighboring Ukraine as barbaric. With the cold of winter setting in, the Kremlin appears to be increasing attacks on critical Ukrainian infrastructure. Western powers look to fight back on Russian oil exports, but Moscow has rejected these efforts. VOA's Arasha Rabasadi has more.
Fires rage in Kherson after a night of heavy shelling. Attacks on this southern Ukrainian city formerly occupied by Russian forces intensified when Ukraine's military reclaimed it weeks ago. Paramedics here treat a man who says half of his house is now gone. Residents of Kherson struggle without electricity, heating, and water as temperatures hover below freezing. They charge their phones and access the internet from pop-up tents. Retreating Russian forces damaged much of the critical infrastructure here, but Ukrainians say they restored partial power to the electricity grid. Western powers, meanwhile, denounced Russian President Vladimir Putin's tactics in Ukraine. On a recent trip to Indonesia for a summit of leaders of the 20 biggest economies, U.S. President Joe Biden and British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak united to label Russia's war on Ukraine as barbaric and called for its end. At that same meeting, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov blamed Ukraine for demanding unrealistic conditions to bring an end to the war. Late last week, the group of seven leading economies and Australia unified in applying new pressure to the Kremlin to withdraw from Ukraine by placing a price cap on Russian oil of $60 a barrel. Russian Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak, quoted by the Reuters news agency, said Moscow will not sell oil that is subject to a Western price cap, even if it has to cut production. Meanwhile, Ukrainian embassies and consulates in six European countries last week reported receiving bloody packages containing animals' eyes. And police in Spain detonated a suspicious envelope found at the U.S. Embassy in Madrid, an attempted attack Russia condemned. Authorities say that bomb was one of several recently sent around the capital, including one intercepted en route to Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez. Spanish authorities have yet to name suspects and stepped up security around public buildings. Separately, a letter bomb sent to the Ukrainian embassy in Madrid exploded while the package was being handled, injuring one person. Ukraine's Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba described the incident as an act of terror. Throughout the nearly 10 months of war, observers both in and outside of Ukraine have called for investigations into Russian war crimes. In the city of Kharkiv, a frequent target for Russian shelling, officials built a cemetery for missiles and munitions for future review. Russia has denied targeting civilians in Ukraine. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
And President Vladimir Putin's point man on energy said Russia, the world's second largest oil exporter, will not sell oil that is subject to Western price cap, even if it has to cut production. Tamara Lindstrom of Reuters reports.
Russia's deputy prime minister made the announcement Sunday after the G7 and Australia agreed on Friday to a $60 per barrel price cap on Russian seaborne crude oil, prohibiting shipping and insurance companies from handling cargoes of Russian crude above the cap. The price cap aims to reduce Russia's income from selling oil and prevent a spike in global oil prices, while pressuring Russian President Vladimir Putin over his war in Ukraine more than 9 months into the brutal conflict. Russia called the cap a gross interference that would destabilize global energy markets. Putin in September warned the West he would cut off energy supplies if price caps were imposed, telling them that Europe would freeze. On Saturday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said the $60 price cap on Russian oil is not serious and will do little to deter Russia from waging war in Ukraine.
That's Tamara Lindstrom of Reuters. An analyst said an increase in threats and violence directed at Colombian journalists is creating fear in the media community. Nicole Sandoval has more from Bogota, Colombia, in this report narrated by VOA's Cristina Caicedo-Smith.
So far in 2022, 177 journalists in Colombia have been threatened, according to the Foundation for Press Freedom, a nonprofit media rights group. According to local police, on November 28, two gunmen on a motorbike killed well-known Colombian journalist Wilder Alfredo Córdoba in the town of La Unión. His death and an increase in threats have created an environment of uncertainty for the country's journalists. Sandra Buitrago, a radio reporter for Arauca Stereo, received threats for her reporting on splinter group holdouts of the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC, a rebel group that signed a peace deal with the government in 2016. This is not the first time since that FARC dissidents have threatened the media. In March 2021, high-ranking FARC member Seuxis Pausias Hernandez, a.k.a. Jesús Santrich, sent a videotape threat to well-known journalist and media directors Claudia Gurizati and Vicky Dávila.
I published an article about the rearming of FARC dissidents. That is the main reason I'm now receiving threats.
Now, Buitrago must travel in an armored vehicle under a security plan overseen by the Colombian National Protection Unit. Arauca is one of the most dangerous regions for reporters. According to the Foundation for Press Freedom, 22 journalists there have received threats in the past year. Because most threats are anonymous, the foundation says it is hard to identify whether they are coming from a guerrilla organization, a drug cartel, a criminal gang, a political actor, or an individual. Adding to the concerns, the foundation reports that of the more than 164 journalists killed in Colombia from 1977 to 2022, few perpetrators have been held accountable. In only one case, all those who were found guilty were punished, and 18% of the other cases resulted in some type of conviction, the foundation said. The rest of the homicides resulted in no legal action. For Nicole Sandoval in Bogota, Colombia, Cristina Caicedo-Smith, VOA News.
Press freedom groups have condemned Burkina Faso's halting of broadcast by French media outlet Radio France International, or RFI. Ouagadougou's military leaders linked the ban to RFI reporting that the junta describes as false. Critics say the military is seeking to control news and information as it struggles against worsening insecurity. Henry Wilkins reports from Niamey in neighboring Niger on the dispute.
Burkina Faso is the second West African country after Mali to take the French broadcaster off the air. Both countries are under military rule. In a statement, the Burkinabe military junta says Radio France International made false reports pertaining to an alleged foiled coup attempt last week and had given voice to Islamist militants. In the wake of the ban announced Saturday, RFI issued a separate statement saying it strongly deplores the authorities' actions and will explore all avenues to restore RFI's broadcasting. RFI also cited its unwavering commitment to the freedom to inform and to the professional work of its journalists. Jonathan Rosen is with the Committee to Protect Journalists, a New York-based advocacy group.
The Committee to Protect Journalists is alarmed by and investigating the suspension of French broadcaster RFI in Burkina Faso. It's unfortunate that as people in Burkina Faso and across the Sahel grapple with insecurity, authorities have chosen to deny access to a prominent source of news and information.
Reporters Without Borders, or RSF, says the authorities' decision will prevent other journalists from reporting on terrorism and could be illegal. Sidibou Merong is RSF's West Africa director.
CSC is the media regulator, which, according to the law, has the prerogative to suspend or sanction the media. Unless the law has been changed, this is also a violation of the media regulation laws.
Burkina Faso has been at war with militants linked to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda for more than 6 years. As the violence has worsened, so has political instability, with the country enduring two military coups this year, one in January, one in September. Both junta's have promised to resolve the country's security problems. Andrew Leibovich is an analyst with Klingendael Institute, a Netherlands-based research group. He says the current junta, led by Ibrahim Traoré, is under increasing pressure to produce results.
The attacks have continued, and the junta is still significantly under threat and still faces, I think, important pressures, political pressure, but also pressure even potentially within the military. So there's a lot for them to balance right now, and I don't think we can say that they've shown real signs of success yet.
The action against the RFI comes after a number of anti-French protests across the country in recent months. Some blame Burkina Faso's military partnership with its former colonizer for the failure to stop the violence. Earlier this year, France announced it would downsize its counterinsurgency military operation in the Sahel and regroup and recast itself under a European umbrella. Across the Western Sahel countries of Burkina Faso, Mali and Niger, fatalities caused by conflict have increased by more than 50% this year, according to information from the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Niamey, Niger. Lisa Bryant in Paris contributed to this report.
In other news, Neymar scored a goal in his return from injury, and Brazil beat South Korea 4-1 to advance to the quarterfinals of the World Cup. Neymar converted a first-half penalty for his 76th goal with Brazil and moved one shy of Pelé's all-time scoring record with the national team. The Japanese team reached the knockout stage of the World Cup for the fourth time and then lost for the fourth time. This came in a penalty shootout against 2018 runner-up Croatia after a 1-1 draw at full-time. Morocco will meet Spain, and Portugal will play against Switzerland on Tuesday to complete the quarterfinals. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Cyril Ramaphosa is not South Africa's first president or leader of the ruling ANC to be dogged by allegations of corruption. While graft claims do not surprise most South Africans, analysts say it's taking a toll on the ANC's popularity. Zahir Kassim reports from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Nelson Mandela's ANC party may have brought freedom to South Africa, but that freedom has been marred by corruption allegations at the party's highest levels. On Monday, the ANC faces a crisis after a report by an independent panel found that President Cyril Ramaphosa may have broken the law and violated his oath of office. The panel's report says large amounts of foreign currency were stolen from a sofa at Ramaphosa's private game farm in 2020, and that he did not report that the money was missing. The source of the money remains unclear. Ramaphosa has denied wrongdoing and has not been charged with any crimes. People on the streets of Johannesburg said they felt let down by the president and the ruling party. This is 28-year-old Gareth Mukhudi, an IT technician.
I'm always disappointed by the ANC. I don't have any faith in them. They don't do much for us. They do much for themselves and their families.
Patrick Tandy is a company director in Johannesburg.
I mean, I was very hopeful when there was the original change, when the ANC came to power, and it's just been a systematic disappointment over the decades of ANC power and leadership.
Despite the frustration of another scandal, experts say the ANC faces tough choices regarding Ramaphosa's future with the party. Political scientist Roland Henwood explains.
All the surveys that I'm aware of indicates that if Mr. Ramaphosa leaves the ANC, the level of support drops by anything between 5 and 10%, maybe even a bit more, which leaves the party at somewhere between 35 and 45% national support. So that means they no longer have the majority to govern if we go to an election now.
Analysts say the party has seen declining support with every election due to its failure to provide basic services like clean water and electricity to the public. Former President Jacob Zuma's tenure was clouded by corruption allegations as the nation's infrastructure declined. An inquiry into statecraft also found that under Zuma's watch, state anti-corruption units had been dismantled and law enforcement weakened. Ramaphosa campaigned on fighting graft, and even though it's been a long journey, Kavisha Pillay of anti-graft group Corruption Watch says Ramaphosa has made improvements.
Prior to President Ramaphosa's appointment, or prior to his election into office, civil society wasn't allowed a seat at the table. We were often shunned, distrusted. There was no real working relationship, whereas now I think there's quite a solidified relationship because the ANC government under Ramaphosa has taken an approach to say that fighting corruption is a whole of society initiative. It can't just be up to government or up to law enforcement. So they're involving everybody.
Ramaphosa says he will challenge the disciplinary report. Political analysts say he is a strong contender to remain the party's president at the ANC's conference due to begin December 16th. Sehir Kasim for VOA News, Johannesburg.
In a remote corner of the Western Australian outback, work has begun on the world's largest radio telescope. Astronomers say the square kilometre array will be capable of searching the stars for signals of intelligent life and listening back to the start of the universe. It's an international scientific collaboration. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
At first glance, this could be a plantation of Christmas trees in the Australian outback. But you're looking at what some are calling one of humanity's biggest ever scientific endeavours.
A video from the Australian Academy of Science explains how 130,000 antennas and 200 satellite dishes will make up the Square Kilometre Array Project, or SKA. It will comprise two giant and super-sensitive telescopes at observatories in Australia and South Africa. By listening and looking deep into space, scientists hope the project can help answer some fundamental questions. Are we alone in the universe? How did the first stars come to shine? And what exactly is dark energy, the mysterious phenomena that appears to be pulling the cosmos apart? Experts have said the SKA needs to be set up far away from the disturbances of radio frequencies on Earth, like those from computers, cars and planes. They've said it will be 8 times more sensitive than existing telescopes and will map the sky 135 times faster. Danny Price is a senior research fellow at the Curtin Institute of Radio Astronomy at Curtin University. He told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation Monday that the SKA has unprecedented astronomical power.
It's going to be one of the most sensitive instruments that humanity has ever built. And to put it into perspective, the SKA could detect a mobile phone in the pocket of an astronaut on Mars.
Australia, South Africa, Canada and Britain are among more than a dozen countries providing funding to the project. A land agreement between traditional indigenous owners, the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organisation, the CSIRO, Australia's National Science Agency, and the Western Australian and federal governments, has allowed construction of the International Square Kilometre Array Telescope to officially start Monday. The giant radio telescope is expected to be operational by the end of the decade. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is Science in a Minute.
Researchers led by the University of Alberta discovered two new minerals that have never been seen before on our planet. One of the minerals was named Elaleite and the other Elkinstantonite, which was named in honor of Lindy Elkinstanton from Arizona State University and the principal investigator of NASA's upcoming Psyche mission. The minerals were found in a 70-gram slice of the 15,000-kilogram Elaleite meteorite in Somalia. In a press release, University of Alberta professor Chris Hurd says, quote, "Whenever you find a new mineral, it means the actual geological conditions, the chemistry of the rock, was different than what was seen before," unquote. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minutes newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Go beyond the daily headlines with VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. Each weekday, join us as we put the latest developments into a global context with stories, interviews, and analysis. Listen online at voanews.com/flashpoint or in your favorite podcast player.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinodofo in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The people of Afghanistan face humanitarian and economic crises born of decades of conflict, severe drought, COVID-19, and endemic corruption. The Taliban's repression and economic mismanagement have exacerbated long-standing economic challenges. Indeed, according to the UN Development Program, the Taliban have reversed 10 years of economic growth in just 12 months, and their restrictions on women could result in an economic loss of up to $1 billion, warned UN Counselor John Kelly. Key to Afghanistan's economic recovery will be the participation of all members of society, including women and girls. But as we all know, said Councillor Kelly, the Taliban has severely restricted the enjoyment of human rights for all Afghans, and particularly for women and girls. Most recently, the Taliban took action to prevent Afghan women from going to parks, gyms, and public baths, all part of a systematic effort to limit women's participation in Afghan society. Such restrictions would further rob another generation of women of their prospects to support their families and to contribute to their communities. Without the full participation of women in the Afghan economy, it will be impossible for Afghanistan to have a full recovery. When women are cut out of the workforce, society loses talent and productivity from half its population. Women could provide lifelines for families facing poverty if they were simply allowed to. They could help create more stable, more resilient communities at a time when those are desperately needed in Afghanistan, observed Councillor Kelly. In September, Secretary Blinken announced the launch of the Alliance for Afghan Women's Economic Resilience. The alliance is a public-private partnership that aims to advance Afghan women's workforce participation, entrepreneurship, and education. The United States awarded $1.5 million to an organization that will support women's entrepreneurship. In August, the United States announced a $30 trillion commitment to support gender equality and women's empowerment in Afghanistan. Clearly, the United States remains invested in the future of the Afghan people. We will continue to work with the international community to support a stable, prosperous, and self-reliant Afghanistan that respects the human rights of all its citizens.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.